This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, Katie.
Hey, how's it going? Be honest.
Oof. 6 out of 10. How about you?
That's not that bad.
I don't know. It's a D.
Okay. All right, Elisa. Because, like, I don't know, off the cuff, if you were to ask me out of 10, I'd be like, oh, I'm a 3. But oh. I don't know. Now I just feel like a complainer.
3 out of 10. To me, that's like, I'm done. This is done.
I mean, I'm feeling a little bit done. If you are watching on YouTube, I mean, just from the looks of me, I mean, I look like I've just come off the oil field.
Are you kidding? You look ravishing. The really? Little swoop of your bangs right now. It's giving.
This is my postpartum hair loss comb over.
It's working for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Welcome to Please Bless This Podcast. This is the podcast where two sisters talk about all things Mormon and pop culture. And sometimes reread Mormon YA novels to see how steamy they get.
Yeah. How much quivering is there. Yeah, I was thinking, and sometimes take whatever opportunity we can get to talk about Twilight.
Yes. I love any opportunity to dive back into the imagination of sister Stephanie Meyer. So the inspiration for this episode, several friends and of the podcast sent us the New York Times article that came out in September 2023 about how Utah is an unexpected hotbed for young adult authors.
Yeah, unexpected for who, though? Really?
I know.
Honestly, it makes so much
sense. Of course it is, right? Yes. So we read that article, and we were like, oh yeah, let's talk about it. And then we decided, let's read a YA book together, just to really, you know, commit to the topic. And so we read, what the hell was that book called? We read The Princess Academy by Shannon Hale.
That's right. Although I'm going to be honest, I'm writing the book report. I didn't read the book, though. I have read the book and I know the book.
Yeah.
I know the material.
You read it as like a child, didn't you?
The copy I have has like my little baby writing on it. Like,
Katie.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
So yeah, so I lived
you...
it.
Yeah, you were deep into Mormon young adult fiction from the
didn't know
jump.
It. Yeah, our mom was definitely indoctrinating me from all angles.
Yeah, is this something we share? Our mom was a sixth grade teacher for her whole career and a sixth grade English teacher. So she read young adult fiction more than almost anything else. So yeah. Growing up and well into adulthood, she just had a million young adult fiction book recommendations for us.
Yep.
I feel like we were like on the cutting edge of reading Harry Potter. We were like early adopters of Harry Potter in our house because mom was a sixth grade teacher. And so she just knew what was going on in that world.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, she's always been sending these kind of books our way for reasons that aren't religious, but that fit with religion, right? Because they are mm-hmm. squeaky clean little books. Yeah.
I mean, we are from a family of people who read for pleasure.
Yeah.
We all like to read. And I think that, you know, it can be a little bit of a slippery slope. If you are a true blue Mormon and you're like really trying to stay on the straight and narrow, and Miss Stephanie Meyer is out there writing about freaking glittering naked dudes, I mean, you're going to read it, but that's the line. And there's going to be conversations. People are like, should I let my daughter read it? Should I read it?
Right.
You know, it's as a whole.
If Twilight is actually scandalous at all.
Right.
It's horny.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not scandalous.
Speaking Big of. Difference. Yeah. Speaking
honestly,
of horny,
the Princess Academy was horny.
Honestly, within the first, I read like 75 pages. It was horny from the jump.
Yeah. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I remember vividly going to the library with our mom when I was a really little kid. And I mean, not to put mom on blast. Love you, mom. If you listen to this, that's rough.
Let us know.
Yeah. Let's open this up. Let's talk about it. But I remember she sure lingered around that romance novel section.
Did she?
She sure did.
Ooh, that surprises me. Because if mom ever recommends a book to you, she makes sure to mention if there is any sex at all. She'll say, oh, I loved this book, but there's icky sex.
Which, like, what?
Yeah, that's
I'm like,
book
stop
band.
Selling it so hard, man.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
You know, she's such a pansy.
One more mention of mom and then we'll leave her out of this.
Okay.
But she hosted a book club brunch for a group of retired Mormon ladies just this weekend, and they read a young adult novel. And
yep,
not
they sure
and
did.
Like the squeaky cleanest young adult novel.
And like young adult is ever. Pushing it. Like mm-hmm. this is for like 9-10 year olds, I'm pretty yeah. sure, is when I read it in school. Yes. So, and it's a good book.
It's a great book.
And please bless our mom.
But that's a thing that adult women are doing in Mormon culture is getting together to eat brunch and talk about books for 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
So let's dive into this New York Times article. Why do you think that Utah is a hotbed for young adult authors? Well, so the author of this article attends a class at BYU, the young adult literature course at BYU. I took this class many, many years ago. It wasn't taught by Chris Crow, the professor who's teaching it now when this article is being written, but he was my supervising professor when I student taught. I student taught for a semester at the end of my time at BYU. So I know him and I know this mm-hmm. class. And when I took it, we had to read something. So I took it during spring term, which is like 6 weeks, 8 weeks. I can't remember. But we had to read like 70 books during that 6 or 8 weeks.
Okay.
We were just pounding through like young adult novels. And that was the whole class, was just reading all these and like writing some book reports. And in class, the professor read a book aloud to us across the course of the class. Like every day he'd read to us for like 15 minutes.
Wow.
And it was soothing and sweet, but like kind of a weird little class.
That's really weird.
And I don't think I realized that like young adult fiction sort of as a genre is a relatively new-ish phenomenon, and that BYU was like a little bit ahead of the curve on like having a class on that genre. And so that kind of tracks with that there would be a lot of young adult authors, but also it tracks with Mormonism for reasons that we'll get into more. Can I just say a couple of things about the professor who teaches this class now? He is a young adult author, but he also in 1995 published a book called Fatherhood, Football, and Turning 40, Confessions of a Middle-Aged Mormon Male. And I'm tickled by that, in part because another man on faculty at BYU in the English department wrote a book called Men and the Art of Marriage Maintenance in 2006. Mm-hmm. So these professor dudes at BYU love like a self-help book for dudes.
Yeah.
And as far as I can tell, both are out of print. But if you own a copy.
Oh.
I would love to hear from you.
Oh, either one of those would be excellent.
Can I just read you a little part of the description for Men and the Art of Marriage Maintenance by Brett C. McAnally, full professor at BYU. In this book, he recounts his efforts to become that elusive creature known as the good husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
Round of applause.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
I want to know everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that gives you a little insight into the man who's teaching the young adult literature course at BYU. Also, the author of the article calls out that the class starts with a prayer and mm-hmm. with a mention that they're at the Lord's University. And I realize, I don't know if non-Mormons know that at BYU, you're like saying a prayer at the beginning of class. Not necessarily every class, but honestly, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was in classes where we sang a hymn at the start of every class. I took like a nutrition class where we like sang a hymn and had like a spiritual thought every freaking class.
Cool.
Isn't that wild?
That's so crazy.
Okay. So from the article, I compiled a list of some of the big names in Mormon young adult fiction. And I'm just going to rattle them off because I bet you've read them. So Brandon mm-hmm. Sanderson, who we've mentioned briefly in other episodes, he finished the Wheel of Time series. He writes fantasy. He's a super rich, super prolific writer.
Yeah.
Stephanie Meyer, obviously, Queen of Twilight. Allie Condy, she wrote the Match trilogy. Also, I know her. Shannon Hale, author of the Princess Academy series. James Dashner, who wrote the Maze Runner books. I don't think I had realized those were a Mormon author.
No.
Brandon Mull, who wrote the Fablehaven series. Orson Scott Card wrote Ender's Game.
Nice.
Also the great-great-grandson of Brigham Young. What a legacy.
Also the most Mormon name.
The most Mormon name, Orson Scott Card, yes. Yes. Mormons love to use their middle name.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They love a three-pronged name. Mm-hmm. Even if they just use an initial. So like O. Scott Card or Orson S. Card, that would be like, mm-hmm. ooh, he's trying to be a general authority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that he uses three full names, that's giving like fantasy.
Yes.
It's giving I'm a writer.
Absolutely.
And also, I'm going to say, like, one of my takeaways for Mormonism, like, you can't fully take the Mormon out of the girl, is mm-hmm. I love that. I love mm-hmm. a three-pronged name. You know? Yeah. I wish that my name wasn't such a mouthful. Because
mm-hmm.
if I use my full name, it's like, oh, do you think you're, like, the princess of Genovia? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, carry on.
You do have a Princess of Genovia kind of name, don't you? Yeah. Okay, so those are some of the big names. Almost all of them, if not every single one of those that I just listed, writes fantasy slash science fiction. So yeah, there's clearly like a preference for young adult fantasy among Mormon authors. And that's interesting and comes up in the article when they're trying to understand, like, why so many Mormons? Yeah. So some of the reasons that the author gives for why so many Mormons. There's an emphasis in Mormonism on reading. According to Brandon Sanderson, he said kids grow up with their parents reading them scriptures. I thought that was kind of a weak answer.
Yeah.
Like, sure.
I don't know.
But that's true of lots of cultures. Lots of religious backgrounds, lots of people. Another answer was that there's a big emphasis on writing in Mormon culture. And we've definitely talked about that. There's like, everybody keeps a journal, but there's also this like, the quote we keep referencing, that there will be like Milton's and Shakespeare's among the Mormons. There is this sort of like literary push in Mormon culture. Like, I think about our grandmother living in the middle of nowhere, Utah, running a literary magazine for like decades.
Yeah.
I
know.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Something.
Totally. How did that happen?
How did that happen?
Yeah, how did she end up the way that she was?
Right?
It doesn't add up.
Right. But then getting at the fantasy of it all, Rosalind Eves, who is a Mormon YA author, said, "Fantasy is often a way that you can explore ideas of trust in something bigger. I've always felt like religious faith and belief in miracles is not all that different from magic."
Magic.
Now we're getting to it.
Yeah. My favorite.
Yes. And we all know Mormons love their magic.
Yeah. They sure do. They love magic. They believe in magic, which is important. Can we talk about Harry Potter briefly?
Please.
So one question I've been asked is, were you allowed to read Harry Potter? Which, yes, we already brought that up. We were on top of Harry Potter. By the time the last few books were coming out, we were buying like a copy for every member of the house. Like, it was bonkers. Yeah. We're such Harry Potter nerds.
Harry Potter ended, the last book came out while I was a missionary. When I came home from my mission, on my bed was a copy of the final book. Like, you've done it, you've served the Lord, this is your reward.
Here you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mormons Mormons read Harry Potter. I'm sure that there were questions, you know. It was a little bit like, you know, because Mormons do believe in that stuff, you know. Growing up, if I was watching something scary on TV, you know, it was a concern that I was letting, you know, evil into our home, you know. So Harry Potter definitely was like on the line, but I think people just loved it. Honestly, I think people just loved it so much. They're like, oh, I'm not giving this up.
Yeah.
You know,
I think so too.
Can we all just be on the same page about this being okay?
Yeah.
You know,
because if I had brought a Ouija board into the house, I would have been, tossed out onto the street. That would have been totally a huge deal. If I had said I could do magic, that would have been a big problem.
That was what I was getting to, is when I did say I wanted to be a witch when I was a kid, there were some tears.
Oh no.
Let's put it that way. There were some waterworks. But don't you want to go to heaven? Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. I just want to make potions in the woods.
Yeah. Because
I'm 10 years old or whatever.
Yeah. You were a little Hermione Granger stan.
Totally.
You just wanted to make potions.
I really did. And I continued to make potions. And that was honestly, to put it on the shelf, man. That was one thing I was like, these people are just too, they're stifling my magical side, my magical, you know, my ancestors were witches. Okay.
Anyway. It gets back to the whole conversation we had in the episode about divination TikTok and how Mormon origins are so magical. And then there's just been this like complete flip flop to like, don't you dare be interested in magic.
Yeah.
You will be.
Yeah. Punished. Our entire religion is based on magic practice.
Mm-hmm.
Of which you may never participate.
Right.
Like you had better not even think of the word peepstone. it never happened.
Not if you want to go to heaven. Some more reasons given in the article for why Mormons write YA. One of the authors interviewed said the Mormon belief in the plan of salvation is similar to the hero's journey.
Okay.
I wrote, oh, brother, in my notes. One of these days we should go through the plan of salvation for folks who aren't super familiar. I actually found the old like visual aids I would use as a missionary when we were taught that plan of salvation. It is kind of hilariously overcomplicated.
Yeah, totally.
There are so many little like levels.
Yeah.
So many little in-between stops along the way.
Totally. Yeah, I feel like I was just having a conversation with Luke the other day about the plan of salvation, and I found myself being like, it's complicated.
This happens. One of the interesting things that, so Mormons believe, minor plan of salvation tangent right now, just for a sec.
Please.
Indulge me. Mormons believe that everyone who's ever been born onto the earth will be resurrected prior to being like judged. And there are, not everyone will be resurrected at the same time. You know, there's a hierarchy based on your righteousness. But eventually, everyone will be resurrected. During the most recent general conference, the current Mormon prophet, Russell M. Nelson, said something about, he was talking about how we need to think celestial. We need to like aim for the celestial kingdom in our thoughts and actions, right? Mm-hmm. And he said that the decisions and actions we do now will determine where we end up, but also the kind of body we have and after the resurrection. And my ears perked right up at that, because that is like a little weird Mormon doctrine that not a lot of people talk about, or I think even know about, which mm-hmm. is that if you aren't resurrected to the celestial kingdom, you won't have the same kind of body. And like deep in Mormon doctrine, there's this idea that if you go to a lesser kingdom, you won't have sex organs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I assumed that they meant like you wouldn't have a perfect body.
Sure. I mean, he kind of is obliquely referencing whatever, like he didn't explicitly say, but this is like a fun little weird doctrine from way back in the day that doesn't get referenced a lot. But him saying that made a lot of people who know about it go like, whoa, let's talk about this. So I've been seeing it come up a lot on like TikTok and stuff. But yeah, the idea is if you're going to like the celestial kingdom, you don't have genitals. And the idea being like, you can't have sex.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And that's like your eternal punishment.
Yeah, you got to get a little punished. Yeah.
Sure. And that's just a fun, weird, silly little,
that's a fun little tidbit. I was going to mention too, I used the words a perfect body. Those aren't my words. No. That is that's language that you hear in the church. They talk about having a perfect body.
Oh yeah.
So whatever that means.
Your body will be perfected at the resurrection. Not a hair of your head will be lost. I remember thinking that meant that I would be skinny.
Yeah.
Like even as a little kid, I was like, well, at least when I'm resurrected, I'll be skinny.
It's a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing to say to people. Yeah. It's a crazy thing.
Right?
And like, you know, I mean, I could go on and on. I've got a lot of thoughts about how people will be perfect, how people are perfect in the spirit world, or people will be perfect in the afterlife. It's like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
You know, what's wrong with them now? It bugs me.
And like, whose idea of perfect, right? Like, what does that even mean? Anyway.
Yeah.
Back on track.
Yes, please.
Another reason that was given for why Mormons love to write YA is that there are big families. You know, Disney is big among Mormons. This is a reason that Brandon Mull, the Fable Haven guy, gave. Mm-hmm. He was just like, oh, it's all about family entertainment. And I do think this raises an important point, which is that it's not just young adults reading young adult fiction, especially in Mormonism. Yes. I mean, even I read so much more young adult fiction when I was still active in the church, even into like my late 20s, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was I've just always like read some. Safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of like it. Now, I don't read it anymore, but in my 20s, in my like early 20s, I was definitely still reading it because I don't know. I read so much of it.
Yeah.
Just kept going.
It was what you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I started reading smut and I was like, oh, well, it's over.
And I was like, this is better.
Yeah.
Finally, though, we get to the real reason. Someone finally says it. There is a church-encouraged distaste for explicit material that can be found in adult fiction, and Mormons prefer to write books that are clean. Finally.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know, again, if people who have never been Mormon realize this, but, like, we weren't allowed to watch rated R movies.
Mm-hmm.
We were honestly discouraged from watching some PG-13 movies.
Yeah.
I've known Mormon adults who won't watch like Groundhog Day or like, I mean, the most benign PG-13 mm-hmm. movies because there's like a few too many dams or hells or something.
Yeah. And it gets
or
intense.
There's
like there's
extramarital sex or something.
And like it did. Like, and some people are like, I literally am not willing to take the chance that I might hear a swear word. Like, mm-hmm. I will just stick to PG.
Yes.
And these are people, these are boomers. These are people in their, like, 50s.
Grown adults. You know,
who have lived full lives and had children and have known so many people. And they are so worried about mm-hmm. hearing swear words, basically. Right. Or seeing too much cleavage.
Right. It's fascinating, right? Like, totally. It's obsessive in a way that... when you're not policing yourself like that, it's like, you don't even notice swearing or cleavage in the way that these people are noticing it.
Right.
They're so like hyper-focused. So no R-rated movies. We were discouraged from listening to music that was considered explicit. Mm-hmm. I remember going to like youth conference or EFY and being encouraged to like destroy CDs and DVDs that were viewed as negative in some way.
Sure.
Destroy. I knew people who were going home and like putting CDs in the microwave or like shattering them to show their worthiness.
What a bunch of boobs.
Ridiculous, right? I mean, I remember like turning down the radio on songs that I liked.
Wait, I have a memory.
Please.
Elisa, I have a memory.
Don't humiliate me.
So I remember you were so funny. Elisa is like 9 years older than me, and she was in charge, obviously, and we shared a bedroom. And so Elisa taught me everything I know about life. And one of those lessons was when you got the No Strings Attached NSYNC album when it came out.
We were my first fans. Concert.
Magnificent.
Yeah.
You got the CD. You had been listening to it, and I wanted to.
I know where this is going. It's like, digital get down, isn't it?
It's digital get down. And you were like, you can listen to this, but you have to skip this song. Like, you cannot listen to this song. You have to promise me that you will skip it. And I did.
Yeah.
And I did. And I sure did. Until eventually it came on and I just didn't notice. And I was listening to it and I was like,
you're bopping around. And they're singing about cyber sex.
Yeah, it's about cyber sex. That's so funny. You were an intense. You were an intense.
Oh, yeah.
Little hall monitor.
It was just my training.
You were really good.
It's not that I innately wanted to steer clear of the song Digital Get Down. It's that I knew that mom and dad wanted me to, and the church wanted me to. And I knew that it was up to me to help you do it too. Mm-hmm. I was just like such a little foot soldier, man. The other song I would skip a lot. Well, in high school, there was that song Sex and Candy that was on the radio all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I remember it would come on and mom and dad were like, nope. Changing the state.
Yeah.
I will say one other interesting thing that comes up in this article is that the church publishes a lot of its own books. Mm. And I think that's worth mentioning too, especially to folks who don't realize the church's sort of reach in these areas. So Deseret Book is a church-owned publishing company and it has 3 imprints. And like,
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay, no insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
You know, they publish religious stuff, but they also have like a, they call it a values-based fiction and nonfiction imprint, where they're publishing things like they publish the Fablehaven series themselves, which, okay. I mean, I've heard of that. I've seen it around. Yeah. It's like around. And they've had 10 books on the New York Times bestsellers list from that imprint.
Hmm.
And then they also have an imprint that is called Proper Romance.
Woo.
And it's clean romance novels.
Boo. But okay.
Which, what? That is so fascinating. I don't think I knew that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to read a Deseret Book approved romance novel just to see.
Oh, I would love to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, I grew up reading a lot of LDS fiction. Like, we would go to Deseret Book and buy fiction. And it was like Tennis Shoes Among the Nephites, which was like a series of books about kids who like go through a portal back in time. And they're in like ancient America hanging out with Nephites and Lamanites. In fact, when I was in 11th grade, my English teacher had us each do a book report of a book of our choosing. And then we would have like a one-on-one discussion with him about our book. And during that one-on-one discussion, he would ask you to read from the book, like just open it up and read for a minute. I don't really know why, but I remember that. So there was one other Mormon girl in my class, and she had chosen a Tennis Shoes Among the Nephites book for her book report. And so he's like, okay, open your book up and read to me. And she read to him from a page where Jesus is visiting the Nephites.
No, that didn't happen.
And I remember sitting across the room overhearing this and being sick to my stomach, like so mortified and embarrassed that my religion was being outed for as being as weird as it actually was in like a school classroom.
Yeah.
And I knew other people were hearing it. And I was just like, people know I'm Mormon. People know this is what I believe. They're going to come up to me and be like, you think Jesus was in America?
That's brutal.
Anyway, I read those books.
Yeah.
I remember reading like Jack Wayland books, which were kind of clean romance. Anyway, the Mormon experience of literature.
It makes a lot of sense. You know, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense that they are publishing romance, clean romance. It makes a lot of sense that a lot of Mormons write YA. It just,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's no surprise at all. It's almost surprising to us that it's news.
Yeah. And especially all these people like pussyfooting around the answer.
Right.
Like Mormons are desperate to censor everything around them.
100%.
And but they're also desperate to experience things outside of their reality. And they love a good fantasy. I mean, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And like, what woman doesn't want to read a romance novel? You know, they're dying for it. They're like, give me clean romance now.
Sure.
I'm going to freak out.
I mean, you think about, too, like Mormons' experiences with like dating, love, sex, marriage. I mean, if you're on the path, if you're doing it right as the Lord intends, you're getting married extremely young, extremely inexperienced as a virgin. You are having sex with another virgin only, and you are both neither of you have like any frame of reference for like emotional intimacy, physical intimacy. So you are very likely going to experience a profound lack in those areas of your life and your relationship just because of how the system is set up.
Right.
And so of course you're like, please, please, please show me like emotional intimacy somewhere. Show me like horniness somewhere.
Show me horniness. And then like beyond even romance, it's like, show me more of life. You know, these people, they get married so young and their frontal lobes haven't even formed and they start pumping out kids and then they got to take care of those kids. They have to work all the time and they have to work all the time for the church in order to stay temple worthy. These people are working all the time. Working.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a little fantasy. Give me.
Yes.
Something.
100%. The time commitment of being a righteous Mormon. I can't tell you how many times I've heard like our parents, but so many other people make the joke that like the church keeps you so busy so you don't have time to sin. Which is like basically straight out of like the BITE model for identifying a cult, right? It's like an institution that keeps you so busy you don't have time to like question it or like experience other things or I mean, it is a full-time job to be a Mormon.
And from the time you're a kid.
Yes. That's what I was just going to say.
Like, when you're a small kid, all the time. When you're a teenager, it's a nightmare. Going to seminary. If you live outside of Utah, early morning seminary. Getting up before the sun to go to church before school.
Yep.
It's a nightmare.
Brutal.
Every day.
That reminds me. We still need to talk about the Princess Academy, and I want to talk about how horny it is and how I was like, because the Princess Academy, I don't think we need to give a full-blown book report. It's just, you could read a synopsis online, but it's written by a Mormon and it's young adult fiction. It was perfectly pleasant and fine. But it was like super Mormon in this one way, which was that the protagonist has this boy in her town who she likes. Mm-hmm. And the reason we know she likes him is she's hyper aware of his little touches.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they were little kids, they would like hug or touch each other, you know, without it really being a thing. But as they've gotten older, I think she's like 14 or something when the novel starts.
Yeah.
They've stopped touching. And then there are a couple of points in the book where their fingers brush or, you know, he taps her arm or something. And it is like, oh, he touched.
Electric. Me. Yeah. It's like Mr. Darcy with the hand.
Yes, Mr. Darcy with the hand, right? Or just everything in Twilight, right? Like, I want to be near you, but I can't.
Yeah.
I can't control myself, even just like with one little kiss, right?
No.
It's the horniest shit ever. But just reading that, I was like, okay, like being this hyper aware of these little touches and like blowing them so out of proportion is so representative of Mormon dating culture, like into your 20s.
And on and on. It's the impression that I was given of like romantic interaction. It's like it's this whole thing, and it's a there's mystery, and it's wrong until it isn't anymore. And then when it isn't wrong, you're gonna love it so much. You're gonna wanna, and it's just like, whoa, okay. Yeah. So like, you know, even just the descriptions of like, you need to remain chaste until you don't have to anymore. Even that was horny. Yeah.
I mean, so you can't show your shoulders as a young woman because you will become pornography. That is literally what the church leaders say. You become pornography when you show skin.
Barf.
On your shoulders. There's also the Mormon obsession with pornography.
Yeah.
And if you look at it ever in your life, you're considered an addict. It's this like huge thing. You need to like confess to your bishop, confess to your family, confess to your spouse. Marriage is ruined because the husband occasionally watches pornography. I mean, it is a wild obsession among Mormons.
And I wonder about that because like I've been out of the church for a long time and like I don't know, we just live in such a different time now where like I think porn viewership is just like up so much compared to in the past. Like everyone has seen porn and and so many people watch porn. How is that being handled? Like, is it being handled the same as it always has been? Is it just this enormous weight? I mean, I feel bad for people. I feel so bad for the people who are walking around feeling like they're this terrible lost sinner, because like sometimes they can't, they're just like, man, I just really want to,
you know? I'm like, just a little bit horny today,
and it's just such a simple urge, you know? And they're like, I can't believe I gave in. And
I know, I did not anticipate saying the word horny so much in this episode. I feel like I don't know another word to describe Mormons.
Yeah, that's the word.
That's the word, because they're not doing anything. But man, do they want to.
Up here?
And man, are they thinking about it.
Lots happening. They sure are. Can I say something before we move on from the Princess Academy?
Please.
It just occurred to me. This is from weeks and weeks ago, the end of last month. I couldn't get over the names in that book.
Mm-hmm.
So the Princess Academy is like, it's they name the characters kind of like Gala, the Hunger Games, you know, what's the main girl's name?
Not in to put you on the Princess spot. Academy?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
It's like some made up kind of bullshit. Here, it's like, it's Miri.
Yeah.
M-I-R-I.
That's right.
And it's a lot of bullshit like that. It's like, I don't know, Poppins and Mary and I don't know, just stupid stuff. But I came up with a list of YA names for us.
Please.
So there's a little bit of a breakdown. So the first few are just stupid ideas. So for me, this is a really dumb one. I kind of don't know why I put this down, but the COT, K-O-T, though, that's like kind of like Divergent, like level. Yeah. Like, this is a weird, like, alternate reality. Yeah,
like you sci-fi. Join Dauntless and you get to change your name and you choose COT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tate. That's my, like, kind of androgynous, you know. Yeah. Again, we're going, like, kind of what's the word? A dystopian.
Yeah.
Katana. That's like my, like, fantasy.
Ooh, kind that's of. Like your avatar name.
Yeah. And then my favorite, and this comes kind of full circle with your name. I want my YA name to be Trellis. That's my, like, I'm like, this is like high fantasy. Like, I'm a fairy or something. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now yours, the obvious one for you is Elsa. Let's be honest. I feel like
it tracks
just the way it goes. I also wrote Elsa, or like Elsa with a Z, because that is something that YA authors do, where they're just like, I'm going to throw a Z or like a Y in there that doesn't belong.
Yeah.
Liesel. Liesel, because that is a weirdly spelled word, and again, they just want to spell shit weird. Yeah. But then the name I came up for you is Alista. So our names are Trellis and Alista.
Trellis and Alista sound like they would save the kingdom from evil.
Yeah, we sound powerful.
Yeah, so. I'm cool. Into it.
Glad I dug that up.
Good job, Katie. I love your
thank you
creative genius at work.
My here. Mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to backtrack just a tiny bit to what we were talking about Mormons and porn. Mm. Because I wanted to tell a story about, so I went to a therapist when I was at BYU after my mission, because I was fucked in the head. And I went to this therapist he worked in the BYU Counseling Center. He's like a Mormon professor. He's endorsed by the church and BYU, you know, just based on his position. And he actually was a pretty good therapist. We met for a while. And I remember we would sometimes just have conversations about like the way that the church negatively affected like how I thought about things and just how it like kind of created unhealthy patterns for me. And I remember him telling me once, he was like, I have a lot of folks who come in here who are guilty.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Guilty about watching porn, for instance. And my job is to help them stop feeling guilty. And I said, well, isn't your job to get them to stop watching porn? And he said, no. And I was like, wait.
Wow.
And it kind of blew my mind as like a recently returned missionary who had grown up in the church with all the messaging that we get, that this like actual mental health professional was like, no. That's not a thing that we can do or even need to do. Is to get people to never see porn or like never actually experience sexual things. It's to help them to not feel like shit after. And I just want to say that was a turning point for me. I was like, okay, wait. So actually I've been taught some toxic things that I need to unlearn.
Yeah, I guess, especially coming from somebody in that position, because I always had the impression, like, people that I know who went to, like, church, like Mormon therapists or whatever, it often was kind of like a, I need to get back on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
I kind of need to be punished for, like, there was some kind of, like, rock bottom moment where I was, like, watching porn or, like, drinking or having sex or whatever.
And I do think there were therapists there who would have gone down that road, who would have told the person, like, what you're doing is wrong and you have to stop. For sure. He said it to me almost like, I know you're going to understand this, so I'm going to be honest with you. But it was almost like it was a secret he was sharing with me.
Interesting. I don't know how you can unlearn that as somebody in the church and, like, still be in the church and still be practicing, like, repentance and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That was always a big struggle for me, was just, like, making mistakes and sinning was so easy, you know, when it came to things like, you know, pornography is a good example. It's so easy to mess that up again and again. Why do I deserve to be forgiven for something that I don't think I'm never going to do it again deep down, you know? Yeah. That was always what I struggled with. 'Cause I'm just like, realistically, you know, at even smaller things, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be pornography, because when you're in the church, pornography feels really big.
It's huge. Yeah.
But even it's huge, but even smaller things, you know, smaller transgressions where you feel really bad about it and you repent about it. But in the back of my mind, I'm just like, I can't put the blinders on like some other people can, but I just always felt like, gonna do that again.
Yeah.
Even if I don't want to, like, it's not that hard, or it's easy to mess up all the time.
Yeah. And
I can't police myself that well. And
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, the rules were so strict. It was almost impossible to keep them all. Like, even if you weren't doing the big things, you weren't like watching porn or having sex outside of marriage, or all the big things are sex things for Mormons. But even if you weren't doing those things, it's like, well, I complained about church this week, or I got mad at someone, or I didn't read my scriptures on Thursday. There was always something.
I feel like a really big one that gets overlooked is just being dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just being dishonest about something.
Yeah.
Because at school, you just couldn't face the repercussions that were going to come if you were just honest about something. And so you lied, or at work, or with your parents, or whatever. Like, I don't know. I'd be making stuff up, you know, and
sometimes
I will.
Sometimes just for fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes just for fun. You know. That was always hard for me. Just like, I mean, I'm gonna. Yeah. I don't think I'm never gonna do that again.
I hear you. I mean, so we've talked about this in other episodes about our like journeys out of Mormonism, but mine went on for years and years and years. And there were many years where I was like, I am not enjoying the church at all. It is, in fact, detracting from my happiness to the point that I don't know that it's good for me to continue, let alone that I believe it's true. But I would talk myself out of actually leaving by saying to myself, well, you haven't lived it perfectly yet. So if you can try to live it perfectly, and you still aren't getting anything out of it, and you're still full of doubt, then you can give yourself permission to go. So for years, I would come back around to that idea, like, well, I haven't been reading my scriptures perfectly. I haven't been going to the temple enough. I haven't been praying every day. I haven't been whatever. So I have to do all the things right first. And then if it still isn't working, I can go. And that's mm-hmm. insane. I mean, I was never going to hit that benchmark.
It's so crazy. And so, yeah, that's why these people just try to keep themselves in such a small mm-hmm. box, and they censor everything outside of that box because it's so hard.
Yes.
It's so, hard for them.
No wonder Mormons love YA fiction, right? Like, when you think about all that, all the pressure to do everything right and not take one step out of line, and how inevitably you are taking steps out of line, it's like, well, at least if I read this young adult fiction instead of this adult fiction, I know I'm not gonna like stumble upon an F word or a sex scene that I'm then gonna have to feel bad about on top of everything else
right.
that I already feel bad about.
I know. I feel bad every day.
Yeah, it's true. We've talked about this a lot, but Mormons love to keep a journal, and I was a big journaler as a kid. And I have not gone back and read all my journals by any means, but I've glanced back at some over the years, and like, the most consistent thing I was writing about was how I needed to be better. How I wasn't being good enough in some way or another. And in some of those journals, yeah, I was 11 being like, I need to be a better daughter. I need to like be more worthy of the spirit. Or I'm like 21 and getting ready to go on a mission, and I'm like, I need to be better. And it's like, dude, you were doing a lot of shit. According to the system I was in, I was trying really freaking hard to be good. Mm-hmm. And all I was ever writing about was how I wasn't doing good enough.
That makes me so sad.
Yeah.
You were always so good.
I was really trying to be a good Mormon, but it was not enough.
And when it comes to being just like a person, as a child, as a just a child, just a person, just a daughter, just a sister, just a friend, like, you were doing great.
And honestly, if anything, being a Mormon was the thing getting in the way of me being a good friend and daughter and sister. Totally. Like, the number of times you've told stories just on the podcast of me being like, Katie, don't listen to that. Don't do that. Promise me you'll never. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell, man? Mm-hmm. Like, instead of just like being your sister, it was like I was the morality police for you. And my friendships, especially before I went to BYU and everyone was a Mormon, like, I think about friends I had in high school where I would walk out of their party if they put on a movie I didn't approve of. Or like, I remember a friend in high school telling me that a group had been talking about me, and someone in the group had said, like, she seems judgy to me because she, like, you know, is, she never swears and she never does this or that. So like, I just feel like when I'm around her, she's judging me. And I remember like being hurt that that was what people said about me when I wasn't around. But of course they fucking did. Yeah.
That's how it was, probably.
That's how it was. I know I was that judgmental. Way when I was a kid.
Yeah. I resent that a lot. Like, I look back on myself when I was a kid and like coming into being a teenager and whatever, and just being so like, I was a really like gullible kid and really. Mm-hmm. Really innocent and like just not very smart, and it the church and being the Mormon, it really didn't do me any favors. I became a victim of like kids who just had a lot more, who were just a lot more streetwise, and man, I really resent that. And to people in the church, it's like, oh, she's so sweet and she's so conscientious, you know, such a conscientious little kid. And it's like, what a burden, you know, can I not? Can I just be silly?
Right.
You know, and
can I just
be
like
a kid
play
and
have fun?
Just,
yeah.
And just go have experiences. Does it everything have to be so intense and useless?
Right. Yeah, we were taking ourselves really seriously.
Yeah. I know, going into school and being like, you know, you can't say that in front of me. What? And being encouraged, like, you need to make sure that boys don't talk inappropriately around you.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Like, basically saying anything. You can't talk like that around me. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Just lock me up and throw away the key. Just, it was so embarrassing.
This reminds me of how in the fifth grade, someone signed my yearbook. I still to this day remember exactly word for word what they wrote. They wrote, "Have a wacky, wild condom style summer." We were fifth graders. I mean, like, what?
Sure.
And yeah. I saw it and was like, oh no, oh no, I'm going to have to say something. And I took it home and mom saw it and she was really upset. And she's like, did you tell them not that that was an inappropriate thing to write? And I was like, I will. And she contacted the school and the kid had to like buy me a new yearbook.
No, mom.
This little fifth grader who wrote like a stupid little line that I remember word for word to this day. And like, if it had just been like, we were a little more chilled out, you know, the fact that I remember that line, because as a fifth grader, I saw it and knew like, oh no, I'm going to be in trouble. They're going to be in trouble. Everyone's going to be upset. This is a huge deal. A joke about condoms is terrible. Like, instead of just being like, haha, whatever, moving on.
Yeah.
I was so hyper fixated on this thing. And that was so reinforced by what happened after that at 40 years old, I can recite it to you.
That's wild, Elisa.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, though, because I remember yearbooks specifically being a difficult thing. Like, I remember policing what people wrote in my yearbooks because I knew mom would look. I remember being like, please, no swearing. Like, don't just say something nice and sign your name.
Don't write about that one time we did a thing we shouldn't have. Like, it can't show up here.
Please.
This has gone into some interesting and unexpected directions. But the overall thesis of this episode is, of course, Mormons love to write and read YA. No duh. Big whoop.
Yeah.
Everybody have a wacky, wild condom style summer.
Amen.
Amen.
I'm stealing that.
Oh gosh, it's so dumb. It doesn't even make any sense. Like,
yeah. Okay.
But it stuck with me. It's imprinted on my soul. Anyway,
that's beautiful.
Thanks so much for listening. We love that so many of you sent us this article. Definitely send us ideas for episode topics, send us stories, send us more like voice notes that we can play on the podcast. We love all of it. Our email is pleasebless pod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok @pleasebless pod. And you know, don't be strangers. We love talking to you.
Please reach out.
Please reach out and please bless this podcast.
Amen.